going to promise Katie Holmes, what, a pan, a comb, perhaps a cat? What does that mean?
Well, there are five different ceremonies that a Scientology couple can choose from. The quote you made is from one of them.
We'll be talking here in this first half hour of Issues Etc. with Karen Pressley about not so much about the Tom Cruise Katie Holmes wedding, but about Scientology weddings and the other beliefs and practices of the Church of Scientology. That's just a little piece, a quote there from the Reverend John Carmichael, who's president of the Church of Scientology of New York, being interviewed in the media on the occasion, of course, of the Tomcat wedding. That's what they're calling it. All of our celebrities end up going by one name when they get married, however briefly they are married. We're going to be talking about that in the first half hour of the program today. We are coming to you live this Monday, the 20th of November. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. In the second half hour, it's audio open lines. Very interesting interview that I heard over the weekend with the director of Jesus Camp. You saw the film that came out, that little indie film that came out called Jesus Camp, talking about the Kids on Fire camp run up in South Dakota, I believe, by a Reverend Fisher. Well, apparently, after the film came out, there was enough fervor over what was going on with the kids at the Jesus Camp. The Jesus Camp is shutting down. We'll hear the interview during audio open lines. Also, an ABC News story on the allegedly deceptive tactics used by crisis pregnancy centers. We'll be hearing that and getting your reaction there. In the second hour of the program, Alan Carlson joins us. We'll talk about the culture war. It's Pat Buchanan who is credited with the popularization of that term, culture war, but the idea actually goes far, far back. We'll talk with him about that. And then Dr. Uwe Simonetta will join us here in Studio A. We'll talk about two-kingdom theology, which goes nicely with the culture war theme. And then Bishop N.T. Wright, Bishop of Durham in England, is our guest for the last half hour of the program. He's got a new book called Evil and the Justice of God. We will talk with him about the problem of evil. That's the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Then a little audio open lines to round off that 10 minutes that sticks over the edge. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And you can email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Karen Pressley is a Christian speaker. She's founder of Wings of Love Ministries based in Atlanta, and she spent 16 years in the Church of Scientology, 9 years working for the international management for the Church of Scientology. Karen, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to be with you today.
Well, since the popular interest is in the Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes wedding, a Scientology wedding, you've attended several Scientology weddings. Tell us about your experience at these ceremonies.
I think I've been to at least five or six weddings, Todd, and there's really nothing traditional about the weddings. The only similarity between a Scientology wedding and a Christian wedding, for example, is the fact that there is a bride and groom and there is an officiator. Everything else is different. First of all, in a Scientology ceremony, there's no talk about God, and the couple is not oriented towards a relationship with God whatsoever. That's not the focus. The whole focus of the wedding is really about some Scientology symbols, including the main one called the ARC triangle, A, affinity, our reality, see communication. And that is a basic tenet of Scientology. It's a symbol that looks like a triangle that the bride and groom are told to project this triangle into the center of the rings that the officiator holds up. And that is actually a Scientology process. Scientology processes are called auditing, and it's something that is what you pay for as you move along the Scientology spiritual path. But they do the Scientology process. They mock up the ARC triangle into the center of the rings, and then they basically pledge themselves to each other. And then the audience, and the guests may not know this, but when you're present at a Scientology wedding, you're asked to participate in a Scientology process by basically making a postulate, or what they call a decision based on the power of your will, that this couple will, you know, live until death do them part. So basically, all the guests participate in the Scientology process.
I'm interested in how you would react to this. This is, again, the Reverend John Carmichael in the news earlier this weekend. He's president of the Church of Scientology of New York. He explains what he thinks is different about a Scientology wedding. Let's listen, and I'll get your reaction on the other side.
Well, if you saw a Scientology wedding, you would say that it has a very traditional look about it. And that's because Scientology has a very traditional regard for the institutions of marriage and for the family. So the marriage itself, the form of it, is very traditional looking. You have a bride in white, a groom in a tuxedo, and the father usually giving away the bride, and all that sort of thing. What's unique about it is that there are principles that are referred to in this ceremony to help the couple not end their relationship with the marriage and say, oh, now this is done, but to encourage them to create their marriage as an ongoing relationship in the future.
Karen, your reaction?
Well, first of all, yes, I agree with him. The bride and groom are there in a tuxedo and a white dress. He talked about the unique principles that Scientology offers to help couples, to encourage them to create their marriage. And a really key point that he's making is exactly the point I'm making. There's no presence of God. The marriage is expected to survive and to flourish totally based on the will of the individuals. There's no help from God. There's no guidance from God. There's no principles from God to help them with this. And there's no blessing. There's no relationship there. So a Scientology couple, as are all Scientologists, have to make it totally on their own strength and their own power. That's a radical difference between the two.
John Carmichael was asked about the role of God in Scientology. Here was his response.
Absolutely. L. Ron Hubbard said in a book in 1951 that no civilization except the most depraved and expiring ones have attempted to deny the existence of a supreme being.
Karen, you spent a lot of years in Scientology. What is the Scientologist's view of God, the L. Ron Hubbard quote notwithstanding? What is the God of Scientology?
Well, in one of Hubbard's early writings, yes, he did talk about the presence of God, but Hubbard started writing in 1951. Since then, he revised his materials over and over and over and issued new ones, and throughout the course of time, he has changed the definition and the meaning of God and also the role of a Scientologist in understanding God. And in Hubbard's materials absolutely teach that they do not have the position and are not able to define what is the supreme being and what is God, and that is totally up to the individual to interpret. So therefore, there is no laid out explanation of a supreme being. There is no defined relationship between a Scientologist and God. So that's a very misleading statement in the way that he used that.
About a year ago, Tom Cruise, who's probably, I guess we could argue, he's the most famous Scientologist around, although many of them are famous, he was asked in the press whether or not someone could be a Christian and a Scientologist. Here's the answer given recently by, again, John Carmichael.
Well, you can definitely be a member of another religion and be part of Scientology. People who join Scientology and are involved in another religion are encouraged to keep their other religion as an affiliation. Scientology is different because Scientology presents practical tools that people can use to make their lives better, to lead lives of better, more self-respect, more respect for others, and to be able to help others. So it's got a different emphasis as a religion.
Can you sort that out for us, Karen?
That is the strongest point that I speak about. Carmichael says that Scientology encourages members of other religions to keep their affiliation while they're Scientologists. That may be true in the very entry-level self-help courses, but that is absolutely false as a person becomes a Scientologist. As a matter of fact, Hubbard's writings, Hubbard has a rule that you, number one, you cannot mix practices. Number two, as Scientology won their tax-exempt status with the IRS several years ago, in Scientology's documentation of church materials, they clearly state that a person may have started with another religion but is expected to completely forsake all other beliefs and just follow Scientology. And I believe that the teachings of Scientology are the antithesis of Christianity. So to be a Christian Scientologist is an oxymoron. One would have to not know what you believe as a Scientologist or a Christian in order to mix the two, because they are opposite teachings of each other.
So why do we hear, say, John Carmichael, president of the Church of Scientology in New York, making that statement? And again, I referenced Tom Cruise earlier last year saying you can absolutely be a Christian or anything you want to and be a Scientologist. It's just a self-help process. Why do we hear people who are in the know in Scientology making these public statements?
Well, having been a Scientologist for 16 years, I'm also in the know, and I know that that line is used in order to recruit. It's a deceptive method, and I personally didn't feel good about it while I was a member, and so I never used that. I think that the reason that Scientologists say it, particularly spokesmen like Carmichael and Cruz, I believe they say that because they do not understand what it means to be a believer of Christ. They might know about Christianity in terms of it being some sort of religious label, but a person who follows Christ could never follow Scientology, because Scientology leads people away from God instead of developing a relationship with them. So what I say is that Cruz, Carmichael, and other spokesmen that say that do not know what Christians truly believe. They don't understand what it means to be a follower of Christ, and the two are utterly incompatible.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment on Scientology weddings or the other beliefs and practices of Scientology, give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or send us your email here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Karen Pressley is our guest. She's a Christian speaker, founder of Wings of Love Ministries, based in Atlanta. She was 16 years in the Church of Scientology, and for 9 of those years, she worked for the international management of the Church of Scientology. I'm Todd Wilkin, and this is Issues Etc., coming to you live this Monday, the 20th of November. So 9 years you worked for the international management of the Church of Scientology. What exactly did you do, Karen?
Well, I had been a fashion designer before I got involved in Scientology, and also a music publisher. So when I left Los Angeles, where I worked at the Celebrity Center in Hollywood, my husband Peter and I moved out to Golden Era Productions, which is where the international management's located, and they used my skills of fashion design in their film department, where they produce all the like advertising and training materials and films and videos for the Church of Scientology. So I designed costumes, and then I eventually got into designing clothing for staff, and my eventual position, I traveled basically around the world wherever Scientology was located, and I manufactured and designed clothing for Church of Scientology staff members. So the purpose of that was to improve the image of staff in order to make Scientology acceptable in all the locations where they were, such as I did this in London, I did this in Copenhagen, I did it in Sydney, east and west coast of the United States, and especially down in Clearwater, where their largest training center is located. There's over 1,000 staff and over 10,000 Scientologists down there.
So you were doing kind of a traveling makeover expert for the Church
Absolutely.
Of Scientology.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I did. I was doing traveling makeovers really to gain acceptance. For instance, down in Clearwater, the church long experienced problems with the Clearwater people, because Scientology staff were wearing sort of pseudo-military-looking uniforms, navy blue with gold shoulder bars and all that, and which looked utterly out of place and ridiculous in a tropical, you know, Gulf Bay town for the image of a religion. So my purpose was to basically survey what would be an acceptable image for a church staff member there. And taking the climate into account, I designed, a clothing program for all the staff. So we got them out of that pseudo-military look and into more of a tropical look. And the whole purpose, again, was to make Scientology's image acceptable to the people so that the church would be more in harmony with the Clearwater area, rather than constantly having conflicts.
Real quickly, you worked at the Celebrity Center in Hollywood. You mentioned that before.
I did.
Did you work with celebrities coming into Scientology or people who are deep into it?
That was my job. Started working there in 1986, and By 1988 or 89, I had become the executive director, and I worked with the president. Our job was to recruit celebrities for Scientology, and we used to work with what was called field staff members, or FSMs. These are Scientology celebrities who were connected with, other Scientology celebrities, like musicians, actors, dancers, things like that. And we would name out different people that we wanted to get involved in Scientology, and then we would work out how they would make that connection. And we would do different things to introduce the celebrities into Scientology, and eventually with the goal of getting them into the Celebrity Center for Services. So that's what we did, was we recruited celebrities.
Let's go to the phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ruthie's calling from her car. Hi, Ruthie.
Hi, I have a question about divorce in Scientology. It sounds like they have a commitment to marriage, but Tom Cruise has been divorced twice without, you know, any conflict at all. And what is that all about, and how committed are they to marriage?
Good question, Ruthie. Thank you. Karen?
That's an interesting question, Ruthie. One thing about that is when Tom and Nicole Kidman were still married, they were pursuing Scientology, and Tom was a lot more interested in developing it than Nicole obviously was. And when they got divorced, Nicole made a statement that she really wanted to raise her children as Catholics. And there is a rule in Scientology that if a couple is involved and one of the spouses wants to get out of it, the one that wants to remain in is expected to either handle that spouse or disconnect from them. So in their getting a divorce, it was obvious to me that Cruz opted to follow Hubbard's policies and disconnect from her rather than remain in the marriage or work it out. So I hope that answers your question in terms of, you know, how Scientology affects the commitment.
Jane is calling from Arnold. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Todd. I have a real sad story about a family that I know that their son was been big time into drugs for years and years and years through high school and out. And so they were on the internet looking for some kind of help. And the only one that would respond to them in all these programs that they went into was Scientology. And they didn't realize it was at the time, but they don't care. He's in like the state of Washington. He's been there a year. He's totally indoctrinated now. And they think it's okay because the Scientologist told them they're Catholic, that a Catholic can be a, you know, Scientologist or anything. And so if anybody's listening, it's a deception.
Yes.
I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thank you, Jane. Karen.
Yes. She's right about that. And for some reason, he might have gotten involved in the Narconon program. I'm not sure. But for some reason, Scientology promotes the Narconon program and does not promote the fact that Narconon is connected to Scientology. They present it like a, you know, like a public servicing program. But if that's what it was, that is a Scientology program. And I actually did a drug rehab program myself. In fact, my ex-husband Peter and I did. We wanted to get off drugs. We were in the Hollywood music business, and we did what's called a purification program. That is actually how we got started in Scientology, after we took one little self-help course. And we did get off drugs, and we did feel more cleansed. We felt a lot more physically in good shape, mentally clearer. But the thing about the drug program is it's not just meant to get you off drugs. It's one of the steps called the route of moving up the bridge in Scientology. And the purpose of the drug program in Scientology is to get you off drugs, but for the purpose of getting you into a clear mindset so that you can study Scientology and progress up their services. So that's actually the motive. That's what that's about.
Karen, did you, when in your years in Scientology, reach that state that, at least from what I've heard, they refer to as clear?
Well, I attested to the state of clear actually about a year after I got into Scientology. I think it was somewhere around 83 or 84. And, there's some good things to say about some of the Scientology processing, except for the fact that, that the promises that they made with the state of clear is that it was far beyond anything that had ever been available to man in terms of spiritual states, and that this was including the state of Bodhi in Buddhism, and Hubbard promised that a clear would never get sick and wouldn't have accidents and things like that, and You know, I never witnessed that. People, including myself, who attested to clear, I saw them get sick and have accidents. And it may provide some sort of, improvement, but it's not an overall utopian or ideal state. And following the state of clear, in order to move up to what they call, you know, the ultimate state, it costs a person to get to the state of clear about $30,000, and then beyond that, you pay anyone who wants to go all the way to the top, which is up to level 8. The average person will spend anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 to pay for Scientology services to get there.
Finally, then, Karen, what is the allure of Scientology?
Well, you know, I think that it offers an alternate to other traditional religions where people, you know, have not necessarily had experiences that they were looking for with God. And people who have never had a personal experience with Christ, for instance, like I had never had, is looking for answers, looking for a way to live a better life. And when you see, and they offer an organized solution to that. The only problem with that is when you see Scientology spokesmen, celebrities like Tom Cruise, say, you know, Scientology made me successful. What that does is it creates like a success equation for other people, especially kids who hear this and say, well, gosh, what can it do for me? And that's the lure. You know, the fact that there's celebrities involved who appear to be very successful, and it implies that you can achieve that same type of success. And in my 16 years, I didn't observe that to be true.
Is it, in fact, a religion?
Well, after 16 years and seeing how the organization was conducted, that was one of the reasons why I left, is I entered it as a religion only to see operating scene, you know, behind the scenes of it definitely being a internationally scaled business. The way products are produced and sold, the amount of money that's made every week, what the money is done with, you know, real estate investments and stuff. And one of my conclusions was that it's a business that sells religious philosophy, and it packages and markets the product of total spiritual freedom at a cost, at a very high cost.
Will you give us about 5 minutes on the other side of this break? I have some other audio cuts I'd like your reaction to.
Sure.
All right. Karen Pressley is our guest. She's a Christian speaker. She's founder of Wings of Love Ministries based in Atlanta. She spent 16 years in the Church of Scientology, 9 years working for the international management of the Church of Scientology. She was former executive director of the Scientology Celebrity Center in Hollywood, California. And when we come back, there's a symbol that I have seen, everybody's seen. If you've watched any of the coverage of the Cruise Holmes wedding, you've probably seen the symbol of Scientology across with a star of sorts kind of interposed over the top of it. What does that symbol mean? We'll hear from the Reverend John Carmichael, president of the Church of Scientology in New York, and we'll get Karen's reaction to it. And finally, the Reverend Carmichael responds to critics who say that Scientology is a cult. We'll hear what he has to say and then round off our conversation with Karen Pressley. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio as our conversation with Karen continues on the other side of this break for just a few minutes. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. When we come back from this break, we'll continue with that, and then we'll have audio open lines for your questions and your comments. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is an interesting one. It takes you back into the early history of the Christian Church to the Great Jesus Debates, as the title says, four early church battles about the person and work of Jesus. This book is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find it at our website. Browse before you buy, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House and ask for the Great Jesus Debates. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would it surprise you to learn that the first several centuries of the Christian Church were years plagued by controversy? There were arguments over the most basic of Christian teachings, the doctrine of the Trinity, the person of Christ, and the very nature of salvation in Jesus Christ. Does it surprise you that many Christians are completely unaware of this history? The old saying goes, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is called The Great Jesus Debates. You can find The Great Jesus Debates at our website, issuesetc.org. It's right there on the homepage, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask them for the Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, The Great Jesus Debates by Dr. Douglas Johnson, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040.
The United States will soon have 300 million people, and a leading population research organization says that's a reason to celebrate.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Population Research Institute says we should not be concerned that the United States is about to reach 300 million people. PRI President Stephen Mosher, a leading expert on population growth, says with the population of the United States expected to continue aging for decades, threatening the impending bankruptcies of Social Security and Medicare, among other crises, America needs more people. Despite the cries of overpopulation cynics, America's growing population is a sign of prosperity.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Yesterday I came across a minute from several years ago. It's proven to be one of my more entertaining efforts. So here it is, yes, a rerun. The other day I told you Diane was out of town, and I quickly turned the kitchen into a dump. On day two of batching it, I loaded all the dirty dishes into the dishwasher. Now, where's the soap? Ah, this looks good. Ultra Sunlight Concentrated Dishwashing Liquid. I poured that into the thingamajig on the inside of the door, closed the door, turned on the dishwasher, and walked away, very pleased with myself. 20 minutes later, the proud one returned to find the kitchen floor covered with soap suds. It took 6 towels to clean up that mess. I inherited my ineptitude. When my dad retired, he helped out around the house. Instead of moving dust around with a cloth, he vacuumed everything. Okay, until he came to a shelf where my mom displayed her collection of ceramic thimbles. That big sucking noise the neighbors heard? The thimbles disappearing into the vacuum. We all know that the simplest household chores require some knowledge. Isn't it strange, then, that people imagine that any religious opinion is true and no religious opinion is wrong? Now, that's a real mess the towels cannot clean up. I'm Dale Meyer.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Well, you know, I would say come in and see for yourself. That's what probably 1,000 people a week do just in the New York church. People are more and more getting involved with Scientology because they find it has answers, real answers, answers that work. So, people who are interested in thinking for themselves, in looking for themselves, those people are finding out about Scientology. Scientology is the fastest growing religion in the world precisely for that reason.
Reverend John Carmichael, president of the Church of Scientology of New York, recently in the news on the occasion of the wedding of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. We're talking about Scientology with Karen Pressley. Here for the next 5 or so minutes of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. And I'd like your reaction, Karen, to that. Not only he claims it's the fastest growing church for the reason that it's basically solves people's problems.
Well, my reaction to that is I would wonder where that statistic came from, because if you check the U.S. Census Bureau as well as statistic, the website from the CIA that provides all sorts of religious demographics. Scientology, I don't even think, registers. And the worldwide statistics say that actually Mormonism is the fastest growing religion, with Islam one of the largest. So I don't know where they get that statistic.
You said that Scientology, after your years in it and upon reflection, is a business selling religious principles or religious ideas. I think that's how you put it.
Yes.
Is it in fact a cult?
Well, in my opinion, it is from a Christian perspective, but there's the definition of cult is really, you know, under discussion by a lot of different groups right now. Academics use the word new religious movements. Christians use the word cults because a cult is considered a group that or an individual that would take Christian teachings and then branch off and alter it into their own without accrediting the Bible or the source of the information. And I refer to Scientology as a cult because I see that that's what they've done. It wasn't until I became a Christian and learned to read the Bible that I found all sorts of excerpts from the Bible. I recognized it in Scientology materials, but Hubbard never accredited Jesus Christ or the author of the book in the Bible as the source of the material. Some of the examples are like this. He would lift from the Bible and say something like, "Know thyself and the truth will set you free." That is a major tenet of Scientology. And in actual fact, you could probably recognize that from John 8:32, where Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free." So Hubbard lifted that, twisted it, and uses it to his own purposes. So it's those kind of things that, for me, categorizes Scientology as a cult.
One of the things that was the subject of interest in the press was a popular symbol for Scientology, which incorporates, of all things, the symbol of the cross. Here's John Carmichael explaining that Scientology symbol.
In Scientology, the cross represents the eight urges that people have to survive. In Scientology, we see that people are trying to survive as individuals, that they're trying to survive through a family and through creative actions, including sex and having children. They're trying to survive as part of groups and through groups. We see them trying to survive as part of mankind, as part of all living things, through the physical universe, through all things spiritual. And ultimately, every individual has an urge to survive as part of the supreme being, as through infinity. But in our view, only when an individual has been able to take responsibility for these other parts of survival can he or she come to really understand the true nature of this supreme being.
Karen, as we wind up our conversation, can you translate what Carmichael was saying there?
Well, he correctly says that the Scientology cross represents Hubbard's eight theory about eight dynamics of survival. Each of the points on the cross represents a different area of survival. But there's two things I have to say about that. Number one, the use of a cross. It's patterned after a Christian cross, and it's used on Scientology organizations to, at a quick glance, give the implication. I mean, once you see a cross there, you think a connection to Christianity, which gives you automatic, well, for a lot of people, automatic acceptance. For instance, there's a picture that's used to promote Scientology in a lot of publications, and it shows a tall steeple that looks like a Baptist steeple with a cross on top. That is actually located out at the International Management Base out in the desert. And that building was built with that type of steeple, even as the public relations officer of that base told me personally that they used a steeple with that kind of a cross to make it look to the rest of the area that they were a Christian-type group, and so it would make people feel more comfortable with them. The other thing I want to say about that cross is Hubbard used to be involved in the occult back in the 1940s, and if you Google the name Aleister Crowley, he was a leader of the occult that Hubbard was associated with, and Crowley used a symbol in his occult that looks almost identical to the Scientology cross. You can see that on the Internet. Just Google Aleister Crowley, the occult, and you can find that symbol. It's amazing how that subliminal message actually, you know, filters through Scientology teachings as well as their symbolism. And that's another reason why they're referred to as a cult. They lift from other people's teachings.
Finally then, Karen, talk with only about a minute about somewhat like Latter-day Saints, Mormonism, who is trying to soften and mainstream its image. It appears to me, at least, that Scientology is attempting to do the same thing in the last several years. Is this true?
Well, I personally think so, because I was one of those people that was involved in it. Number one, we were removing, when I was involved prior to 1998, we were getting rid of the hard image of the staff that the staff wore pseudo-military-looking uniforms, which actually repelled people. They didn't understand what the symbolism of that was to Scientologists. So we changed that. We changed the look of the staff. Scientology is becoming, well, they say that they're becoming less litigious. They developed a reputation for being the most litigious group in America, because they would sue ex-members for speaking out who exercised their First Amendment rights. They didn't want people exposing their experiences in Scientology, and I understand that those lawsuits have really calmed down. Even on the Internet, I think the battle might be less vicious as it was several years ago when there were so many court cases. And I really think that that's because they've realized that their hard-nosed, hardcore attack mode is not something that fits with the image of a quote-unquote religion, and I think they're finally getting that idea, which is why I think they're tempering that. I think it's all about public acceptance.
Our guest, Karen Pressley, has a website address. It's KarenPressley.com, KarenPressley.com. Karen is a Christian speaker, founder of Wings of Love Ministries, based in Atlanta. She spent 16 years in the Church of Scientology, 9 working for the International Management of the Church of Scientology, and a former executive director of the Scientology Celebrity Center in Hollywood. Karen, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much, Todd.
For the remainder of this hour, we've got audio open lines. This caught my interest this weekend because, of course, we were talking about the Jesus Camp movie almost as, well, before it came out. As soon as the trailers were on the Internet, people were emailing us saying, have you seen the trailers for the Jesus Camp movie? They were kind of shocking to watch. The film apparently caused enough fervor that, it looks like Jesus Camp is shutting down. And I heard the following interview this weekend, and wanted to share it with you, with the founder of Jesus Camp, Becky Fisher. And this comes from Weekend America.
Let me say something about Harry Potter. Warlocks are enemies of God. And I don't care what kind of hero they are. They're an enemy of God. And had it been in the Old Testament, Harry Potter would have been put to death.
A scene from the new documentary Jesus Camp, about a Pentecostal summer camp for children in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. And Becky Fisher is the woman you just heard. She runs the camp featured in the film. And we found out this week that the movie has provoked such violent reactions, she's shutting down the camp. Since the film came out, the campsite was vandalized, and Fisher's received threatening emails and phone calls. Becky Fisher, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What reactions did you get personally from people about the film?
Frequently, I'm compared to David Koresh. A frequent one is being accused of being another Adolf Hitler, raising up a Hitler youth movement. The flip side of that, we have people from the Christian community that go and see it, and they'll come out and write me an email and say, man, we were so touched, we wept all the way through the film when we saw how powerfully God was touching those children. And so, I mean, we've really run the gamut on the negative. It's just been amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Let's give you a chance to explain what you meant by some of the language that you used in the film. Let's play one of the clips some people found provocative. And in this scene, you're in your kitchen. You're watching a video of children you minister to. And you're explaining to the filmmakers why you think it's so important to reach out to kids spiritually.
If you look at the world's population, one-third of that 6.7 billion people are children under the age of 15. One third. Where should we be putting our efforts? Where should we be putting our focus? I'll tell you where our enemies are putting it. They're putting it on the kids.
They're going into the schools. You go into Palestine, and I can take you to some websites that will absolutely shake you to your foundations and show you photographs of where they're taking their kids to camps like we take our kids to Bible camps, and they're putting hand grenades in their hands. They're teaching them how to put on bomb belts. They're teaching them how to use rifles. They're teaching them how to use machine guns. It's no wonder, with that kind of intense training and discipling, that those young people are ready to kill themselves for the cause of Islam. I want to see young people who are as committed to the cause of Jesus Christ as the young people are to the cause of Islam.
Christian Church Group leader Becky Fisher in a scene from the documentary Jesus Camp. So, Becky, what do you think some people get wrong about the message you're trying to convey there?
Apparently what they're hearing, Barbara, is they're hearing me say, I want to have a group of kids just like those kids that are just as radical, that will put on suicide belts and will kill other people. And nothing could be further from the truth. When I say having kids lay down their lives for the gospel, you have to understand that's a completely different paradigm to a Christian than it is for a terrorist.
So when you use language with the children like you should be a dedicated Christian soldier in God's army, you're using it metaphorically, and this is the kind of it's a linguistic misunderstanding that you feel people watching the film have.
Absolutely, because there is so much language in the Bible that speaks of things like put on the whole armor of God, that you will stand against the attacks of the enemy, which is not people, because it clearly says flesh and blood is not our enemy. We do not war against flesh and blood, but we war against powers and principalities and rulers of darkness. In other words, it's a spiritual warfare that we're fighting. We're not fighting against people.
Now, before the interview goes on, I can understand the point she's trying to make. She's trying to say, look, we're not like the terrorists. The terrorists talk about holy war, and they mean literally making a holy war. We talk about holy war, and we mean metaphorically. There are two problems with that, or at least potential problems. One is, do you think the kids at Jesus Camp get that? Do you think they really understand? If the emphasis is, and if you've watched the trailer, you will note that the emphasis is a lot on the militaristic aspects of what they say being a warrior for Jesus or a warrior in God's army. Do you think all the kids get that? We're talking about little kids here. You really have to be sure that all the kids are understanding. We don't mean literally, we mean figuratively. And isn't this what we hear from radical Islam or from less than radical Islam? Come on, when we say holy war, we don't mean holy war. We mean the personal struggle. We mean spiritual warfare. Becky Fisher can't be mystified that people are misunderstanding her. If we are going to say, look, what we mean is metaphorically warriors in God's army, then when we hear the less than radical Muslim say, what we mean is metaphorically warriors in God's army, we should take their word for it too. Now you can react to this National Public Radio America Weekend Edition interview with Becky Fisher of Jesus Camp, or I should say formerly of the Kids on Fire Jesus Camp, because the camp is shutting down after the film had its run. Or call in number 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio. We are coming to you live this Monday, November the 20th, Issues, ETC at KFUO.org. You're listening to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Back to the interview.
Well, here's another clip from the film Jesus Camp that got some people going. And again, you are speaking to the camera, you're in your kitchen, and you're further commenting on your role in teaching children in their faith.
I would say there's a friendlier environment now in the United States towards Christianity than there has been in my lifetime. And a lot of it has to do, just in the last few years, has to do with President Bush. He has really brought some real credibility to the Christian faith. He's been very open, blatantly open about his faith in God. This moment right now today is a fulfillment of prophecy. We've got to stand up and take back the land.
What do you mean by take back the land?
when we say that, we're looking at the culture around us right now that has eliminated prayer from schools, that has told us we can no longer sing Christmas carols in our schools or in our capital. When we say, take back America for Christ, all we are saying is, hey, wait a minute, this is the way it's always been. This is what our country was founded on. And all we want is to take the ground that we feel we are losing in the court systems of America.
You know, there's another scene in the film that some people have reacted to, in which there's a cardboard cutout of President Bush at the front of the room at a camp for.
Before we get into that Bush thing, because that's a separate issue, got to comment on this. First of all, she says, look, the friendlier attitude toward Christianity in America today is largely due, she said, to George Bush, who's openly, blatantly open about his faith in God. Yes. The same president who says that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. He has been open on certain aspects of his faith, one of which he's repeated again and again and again, and that is that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. He's open about that. There's no doubt about that. But if she thinks the battle is in the court system, as she said before, we're just trying to take back ground that we've lost to the court system, then why isn't she training the next generation of Christian lawyers instead of Christian warriors? Why doesn't she start with these children teaching them the law so that they can enter into the judicial professions, become judges, and take back the land for Jesus? I have no problem with someone saying, look, it's been this way. Christianity has been woven into American culture to a great degree in the past. And it's a shame that it isn't woven into American culture the way it used to be. But does that mean that Christians have the right to take back that ground? That is, no, that culture belongs to us. I think that's what I hear Becky Fisher and people like her saying, is that the culture used to belong to us and it needs to belong to us again. When else in Christian history has the culture belonged to Christianity? There have been points in Christian history where Christianity's influence on the culture has been so profound as to say that it basically led the way culturally. The results have been mixed. There was a time in European history when there was no distinction made between the temporal authority exercised by princes and kings and the spiritual authority exercised by the Pope. That was the high point of influence, the medieval period of Christianity's influence over the culture. The land belonged to Jesus then, or I should say to the vicar of Christ. At least a major portion of Europe did. How does God make Christians? By bringing them into camp and teaching them to fight the culture war? Or as Jesus says, by baptizing and by teaching? And please, if it's going to be Jesus' camp, where is the gospel in all of this? Where's the Jesus who came and did what he did to win the victory over sin, death, and the devil for us? Where's the real spiritual warfare in all of this? The war that was fought at the cross and won at the cross? Where is that? All right, yes, she does have a cardboard cutout of George W. Bush, and in the film, kids gather around it to pray.
You know, there's another scene in the film that some people have reacted to, in which there's a cardboard cutout of President Bush at the front of the room at a camp for worship, and the children are praying, they're blessing President Bush. Looking at it, it almost appears as if they are praying to the cutout. What do you think viewers are misinterpreting about that scene?
I would really like to know. That is one of the pieces of the film that fascinates me more than anything else, because that is probably one of the most talked about portions. And one of the things the Bible says is pray for those who are in authority over you, that you might live a peaceful life. And so we believe that no matter who is in office, no matter which position he holds, whether it's the President of the United States or the police department or our senators and our congressmen, that whoever has been put in a position of authority over you, we're commanded to pray for them. Had this been President Clinton, I get this all the time. Well, would you have gotten a cardboard statue of President Clinton? Absolutely. I'll tell you, if there were born-again Christians living in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in power, and there were, they were scripturally mandated to pray for Saddam Hussein that they might live in peace.
Good for Becky Fisher. I mean, she has made a point that I think is 100% right. I do question putting up a cardboard cutout of President Bush because, again, I ask the question, do the kids at Jesus Camp understand this distinction that she's making? We're talking about children. We're talking about little kids. Have you seen this? Little kids. Do they understand that when they stand in front of the cardboard cutout of President George W. Bush and say their prayers for him, that they're not in any sense praying to him, that the image merely is there to remind them of who they're praying for? It's like having a picture of someone that you pray for. Do they understand that? But in her point about praying for those who rule over us, even Christians, under terrible dictatorships, she's got it right.
Well, when you agreed to be filmed and to tour with the film, what hopes did you have for it? What effect had you hoped it would have on people who saw it?
My hope was that the Christian community would go and see the film and that they would recognize that these kids were amazing kids and that the potential of children was far greater than they had ever assumed it was in Christianity. People go to the film and they see those kids crying and weeping and sobbing, and they think those kids are being browbeat and put down and beat over the head with guilt and shame. That nothing could be further from the truth. Those children are absolutely passionate about their relationship with Jesus Christ, and it comes out in emotional ways. That's what I wanted people to see and say, is there something here that we can learn about the discipling of Christian children in our churches that we don't understand right now?
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Thank you.
Yes, you bet.
All right, there's the interview. Look, I don't think those kids were being browbeat. I don't think that they were being weighed down with guilt and shame. I think they were being worked up into a froth. I think they were being manipulated. You know, there are ways of manipulating children. And I've expressed my concern about this several times whenever we talk about Jesus Camp. There are ways of manipulating children, especially their emotions, that have nothing to do with them making feel guilty or making them feel bad or anything like that. You get these kids away from their parents, at a camp, isolated from the other influences in their life. You feed them a steady diet of this message, which is very intense, and it could be any message. You have the music, the dancing, the face paint, Becky Fisher's preaching. Lay aside for the fact whether you agree or disagree with what Becky Fisher's preaching. I imagine there are some Christians who had sent their kids to Jesus Camp thinking, hey, it says Jesus on it. It can't be bad. There can't be anything suspect about it. After all, it's Christian, isn't it? Who watched the film and said, what in the world did we send little Jimmy off to do that summer? Even if the message were as wholesome and as innocuous as could be, even if this were a message that was completely and utterly good, the potential for manipulation still exists. The end does not justify the means. Well, we need to get them this good message, but we're going to use manipulative techniques to indoctrinate them. No, the end does not justify the means, even if your message were, and in the case of Becky Fisher, I don't think it is, even if your message were as pure as the driven snow. She wanted to show a Christian audience the potential that children have. I don't think there's a problem with Christians underestimating their children. What there is a problem with is Christians undereducating, under catechizing their children. They think, I'll send him to Jesus Camp. He'll come back on fire for Jesus. Rather than patiently, calmly, as a parent, a mother, a father, teaching your children the Word of God. When we come back from this break, it's hour two of Issues Etc. We've got, what do we got ahead? We've got Alan Carlson. We'll talk about the culture war right after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton, on why you should support LCMS World Relief.
LCMS World Relief is so important because it gives flesh to the love that Christ commands us to have. I'm reminded of the words from 1 John, where the apostle wrote, "Little children, let us not love with word or tongue, but in deed and in truth." And when you support LCMS World Relief, that is precisely what you're doing. You're loving in deed and in truth. You're providing food for the hungry and shelter for the homeless and clothing for the naked. It's a way that the love of Christ is actually incarnate and touches these people's lives, and it's just a wonderful thing.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, look for their logo at our website, issuesetc.org, or call them, area code 314-996-1683, 314-996-1683, LCMS World Relief.